You know, we want all of our children and grandchildren, of course, to be happy and healthy, but what about mentally strong, too? We'll explore benefits of raising children with the skills they need to face all their challenges and to grow into mentally strong adults. We'll do that coming up here right now on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest is Amy Morin. She is a licensed clinical social worker, a psychotherapist, instructor at Northeastern University, and she's the author of 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do, Raising Self-Assured Children and Training Their Brains for a Life of Happiness, Meaning, and Success. And she's with us to look at the support and encouragement that parents and grandparents and loved ones can use to help our children grow stronger and become better adults. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Maybe you've got some questions and stories, experiences to share. Maybe you're having some issues with your own children or grandchildren and would like to hear what Amy has to say. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Amy Morin, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, I have a 14-year-old, and so I was reading your book with great interest, because there are always things that happen in the life of a young child that, you know, sometimes you're scratching your head wondering, what did I do wrong, or where could I do better? And I think your book is very helpful in that regard.
Well, thank you. I really tried to create a guide that would help parents know, how do you help kids build mental muscle, and how do you take their mistakes and turn it into teachable moments, and where do you look for those learning opportunities, and how can you keep guiding them even when you go through rough patches, which she will.
Yeah, which definitely she will, although Emily's doing pretty well right now, as a matter of fact, and we're glad to have her as a daughter for sure. Before we dig into the book, what led you to create the list of things mentally strong parents do? You wrote that book as well.
Well, my first book was 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do.
Yeah, people.
And I just kept getting so many questions from people asking me, how do we teach this to kids? And so that led to my second book, which was, okay, let's create a guide for parents. How do you raise kids to grow up to become mentally strong people? And it's not something that most people talk about. We talk so much about physical health or physical strength, but we don't really talk much about mental strength. And we're finding that when kids grow up and they go away to college, they don't always have the emotional and social and cognitive skills that they need to get through tough times and to deal with challenges when they're on their own. So I really wanted to create a guide that would give parents strategies to help them build their own mental muscle, but also exercises too that would help kids develop their own mental strength.
Yeah, you talk about core beliefs in your book and their role. What is the, you know, what are these roles? Can you build them later in life?
You can. So when we're kids, we all develop sort of beliefs about ourselves and other people and the world in general, and we carry most of those beliefs with us throughout the rest of our lives. And parents have an opportunity to instill healthy core beliefs in kids when they're young. You have this window of opportunity where your child's learning, who am I? And are other people inherently good, or are they evil? Are they out to get me? Is the world going to be a supportive, kind place, or is it going to be a horrible, awful place that is going to always hold me back? All of these sorts of things that kids go through, their experiences, teaches them life lessons, and parents have an opportunity to make sure that kids are developing healthy beliefs. And we know, I see as a therapist, I see plenty of people who come into my therapy office when they're 30, 40 years old or beyond, and they are sort of stuck, and they have to unlearn some of these things that they held to be true for so long. It's hard to unlearn something once you think that it's true. And so that's why I think it's really valuable for parents to start teaching kids from an early age. How do you develop healthier core beliefs about who you are and about other people, and how to find your place in the world. And if we can start teaching kids that from a really young age, it's much easier to build mental muscle and maintain your mental strength over the years.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you talk about building mental strength, I think in your first book, that it's a lot like building physical strength in many ways, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's about saying, what are the healthy habits that I need? But then you also want to give up bad habits, too. So, for example, if you were working with your child or on yourself to say, how do I build physical muscle? Maybe you'd go to the gym. But if you wanted to see better results, you'd also have to give up bad habits like eating too much junk food. And so we can say the same for mental strength. You need to establish lots of good habits in your life, but I also wanted to create a guide that would say along those same lines, here are the bad habits to give up. And if you give these things up as parents, no matter what kind of parenting strategies you use or no matter what kind of discipline you employ, if you don't do these certain things, then you'll give your kids better opportunities in life. It's really the... These were the 13 things that are fairly common that I see parents do, but they're robbing kids of mental strength. And if parents can give that up, then you can raise mentally stronger kids.
Yeah. And, you know, you have such a life of your, I mean, the experiences that challenges that you have had in your life had to have informed the writing of your books in many ways.
It did. In fact, I didn't set out to write a book. It started out as an article. And I wrote an article called 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. And it went viral. It was read by 50 million people. And that led to the book. But really, I didn't publish it in hopes that something that it would be read by that many people. It was a letter to myself. I had gone through lots of difficult times in my life. My mother had passed away when I was 23. And then when I was 26, my husband passed away. And a few years later, my father-in-law was diagnosed with cancer. And as a therapist and through my own grief, I'd learned that bad habits are what would really keep me stuck. So I wrote a letter to myself of all the things I didn't want to do because I knew that those bad habits were tempting, but that they'd keep me stuck. When I was done, I had a list of 13. I thought, well, if it's helpful to me, maybe it would be helpful to somebody else. So I published it online and from there, it bloomed, and I got 2 book deals, and I've been talking about mental strength ever since. But I didn't write the list because I'd mastered it. I wrote it because I struggled with it, too.
Yeah. Well, you're a therapeutic foster parent. I imagine that has helped in the development of the list?
Absolutely. You know, I've seen that kids, no matter how much they're struggling or what they've been through, that they can be resilient, but we have to give them the tools. We have to teach them the healthy habits. We have to really instill in them that they can overcome certain things or they can face challenges head on, but they need a lot of guidance from us. And I think if we can intervene and teach kids how do you deal with life's toughest challenges and how do you give up these unhealthy habits that maybe they've developed already, then we can help them develop a lot more mental muscle. But it really takes a lot of guidance from parents to do that. And talking about how to teach kids how to be mentally strong, I could have written a kid's book or a book just for teenagers, but I didn't want to. I wanted to write a guide for the parents and the teachers and the adults in their lives so that the adults can then say, okay, I know the skills too, so I can be there and coach you right there in the moment when you're struggling.
And you know what, let's just dig into the book a little bit. I love the way you put this book together because I love the examples that you begin each chapter with and then, you know, follow through in the book with in each chapter with perhaps other examples, which really help give a picture of it and of what you're talking about. And I found that very helpful in reading the book, and I also sat there and thought, well, you know, in some way, well, I know somebody like that, or I had that experience in my own past in one way or another, either directly or indirectly, and that's a very helpful approach.
Good. You know, I just from my own life and from my work as a therapist, I definitely come into lots of different examples and ways that I could demonstrate that to people. So I was excited to be able to share some of those in the book.
You know, let's take a look at some of the things that you're writing about. At first, you write they don't condone a victim mentality, as you're talking of 13 things mentally strong parents don't do. They don't condone a victim mentality. And you were writing about Cody, was his name, an ADHD child. You gave
yes.
that kind of experience, if I'm not mistaken. But walk us through what it means, don't condone a victim mentality.
Well, I think as parents, it's easy for us to look at what our kids don't have. And, you know, nobody's kid is gifted with everything in life. Maybe your child's the shortest kid in the class, or maybe your child has ADHD, just like Cody did, which was the example in the book. And I think it's easy for us to want to advocate for our kids, or we go to bat for them to say, no, my child shouldn't have to do as much work as the other kids, or my child doesn't have it as easy as the other children do. And when we feel sorry for them or we start letting them take shortcuts, it reinforces to them, yeah, I can't really go out there and do all the things I want to do in life because of fill in the blank. And again, maybe it's because you went through a divorce and your child feels bad about that, or your child doesn't have as much money as the other kids in his class, or whatever it is. I think it's easy to start making excuses or to let your child off the hook. And every time we do that, it just teaches your child that he or she's a victim. And we see that a lot. I see it in my therapy office. People that grow up thinking, I could never be a leader of a company because I have ADHD, or I could never go to college because my parents didn't have any money, or I could never go out and get a great job because I wasn't as smart as the other kids. And we develop these self-limiting beliefs when our parents do those sorts of things or teach us those sorts of lessons. And so I think it's so important to teach kids that, yes, maybe you have some things in life that are stacked against you, but everybody does, and that's okay. And you can still try to go forward and beat the odds, and you're not a victim. And when we can teach them that, we raise really competent kids who go on and try to be more capable, rather than thinking that the world's going to hold them back, or that they can never reach their greatest potential because of something that's there in life. And we all have at least one or two of those things that we could blame for our shortcomings.
But it's at the same time, it's so difficult, I think, for a parent to not feel that empathy for the child because of whatever condition it is.
It is. And, you know, to be able to say to your child, yes, I 100% get it. You have some complicating factors, and it's going to be hard. And maybe it's a lot tougher for you than it is for the other kids. But at the same time, we're not going to focus on all the things you can't do. We're going to focus on the things that you can do. And I think when parents go into it with that attitude, then they can teach their kids to do their best, to try their hardest, and to not blame other people when they don't succeed.
How do you suggest parents go about that process? I mean, do you? Yeah, go ahead.
You know, a couple of things. The first one is just the attitude that the parents take. If you believe, gosh, my child has a problem that's going to make them not be as good as the other kids, then your kids will adopt that as well. Or for parents to say, you know, are there excuses that I make? I run into a lot of divorced parents who will say, you know, gosh, my child shouldn't have had to deal with that now that I'm divorced, so I sort of overcompensate, or I feel like I let my child get away with extra stuff because he comes from a broken home. Well, it's that sort of stuff that then reinforces to your child, gee, because your parents are divorced, you're not as good as the other kids, or you deserve special treatment. And that's not healthy for kids. And one of the
and not for the parents either. You know what, Amy, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after the news. Please stay with us. What do you do to help your child gain the mental strength he or she needs to meet life's challenges? That's the topic we're exploring this hour with Amy Morin. She is the author of 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do, Raising Self-Assured Children and Training Their Brains for a Life of Happiness, Meaning, and Success. She's also a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist, and instructor at Northeastern University. So what do you do to help your children in your life to be mentally strong? Has there been a time where it didn't go according to plan? What happened? How'd you fix it to help the child learn from the situation and build mental muscle? Look back on your own experiences where you raised, how you were raised. Were you raised to be mentally strong? How did that affect you as you aged. And teachers want to hear from you as well. What do you do to build mental muscle in your classrooms? Join in the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. And Amy, we were talking about, I'm sorry to, that I broke in on you there. We were talking about this whole business of not condoning sort of a victim mentality. And maybe go back to what are some helpful things to remember in that kind of situation? What should parents avoid?
Well, I think one big thing is to catch kids when you notice them saying things like, I'll never be as good as the other kids, or we lost the game and it's all my fault. When they're blaming themselves excessively, or they are taking on this idea that they could never be as good, to correct their thinking and say, well, is that really true? And really talk about it in a way that helps them come to a healthier conclusion so that they don't think something like, just because I have ADHD, I'll never be able to get a good job, or I could never go to college, or something along those lines. And then to say, well, let's figure out, is this realistic? And if not, then how can we replace those sort of exaggeratedly negative thoughts with something more realistic? And in my book, I have a specific exercise that goes through that. But I think that's key to raising a child who can think more realistically rather than thinking overly negative and always looking on the downside of everything.
Yeah, we had I had one instance from someone who said their daughter didn't make an athletic team and she really wanted to make that high school team. And when she found out she didn't, she said, well, it's your fault, she told the parents, because you didn't let me play in that club team. And so that person was sort of at a bit was at a loss to how to respond to that.
Yeah, I've run into similar situations where kids will say that, you know, it's all your fault because of this, or I couldn't have done it because of that. And for parents to not take on that extra responsibility or to teach kids, yeah, sometimes you don't get all the same things that the other kids get, but you can still choose to do your best, and life isn't always fair, and that's okay. And it's you don't always have to get an equal amount as everybody else, but how can you deal with it when you don't? And we give kids the coping strategies and the skills that they need to know that, yep, that's the way life works. They're much better equipped so that someday when they don't get a job or when they get rejected for a promotion, they can handle it with grace and still be able to move on and say, how do I learn from this, rather than how do I blame other people for holding me back?
Lisa in Marinette has something for us. Hi, Lisa. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to call as a, I'm an ongoing child protection social worker, and I have done this for 15 years, and I have watched, I could not agree with your guest today more about making mentally strong children. I obviously, in my field, work with families that are overcoming extreme challenges, but I do see a theme in which we're not teaching kids how to cope. Life is not easy. It's difficult. We have a number of hurdles, and I watch parents. I find that it's either they do too little or too much, and we have these children growing up in a world where their expectations are so dramatically different than what is really occurring day to day. And when they become adults, they sort of wonder why things are the way they are. And it's all because of, I think, just this theory by parents and some real ineffective parenting skills that are basic to help them understand that, you know, things are tough and we go through problems and we have to get through it. And you have good days and you have bad days and you have to learn how to cope with that.
Thanks for calling, Lisa. Comments, Amy, Maureen?
Yeah, I think that's true. That I think a lot of people will say, well, I'm not a helicopter parent, so I don't have any problems. But it's not just helicopter parents that are preventing kids from developing mental muscle. You have the other end of the spectrum, too, where parents are letting kids go out and do things, but they're not turning those things into teachable moments and learning opportunities. Kids need us to guide them and proactively teach them. How often do you talk to your kids about emotion and emotional skills? We know that 60% of college kids, when they get to college, say, I didn't have the emotional skills I needed to function beyond high school. Once I moved out of my parents' house, I was unprepared. They taught me everything I needed to know about academics, but not enough about my emotions. So it's just one example where I think we're just not doing enough to teach kids about all of the things in life that you might not learn inside of the classroom. And how do you deal with challenges? How do you bounce back from failure? How do you deal with when you're scared of something? And I think if we just focused more on teaching kids those skills, they'd be set up much better for life and better prepared for the realities of the world.
And frankly, we don't, as parents, don't get a lot of training. I was looking at your book cover as you were talking just now, and I was thinking, you know, this would be a really good gift for new parents because we don't really get that kind of education in school.
No, we don't. And I think for parents too, when I talk about teaching kids about emotions, parents will say, I don't know the first thing about emotions myself, so how do I teach my child? And so I think it's really going back to the basics. How do you learn these things and teach them to your kids at the same time? And for a lot of families, it's about learning it for the first time themselves or figuring out, how do I teach this now in a kid-friendly manner? And so I don't fault parents for it. None of us were taught this. I know I wasn't either as a young child. But I think now that we know more, we need to invest more energy into learning about it and figuring out how do we instill this and make it part of our family. We talk so much about physical health. Now let's talk a little bit about mental health and mental strength and how we can all become the best people that we want to be.
And, as proof, I mean, you had, 15 million people read that article? That's got to tell you that there are a lot of people that really need that help and want that help.
Yeah, it was actually 50 million, but it doesn't matter once you get past about 10 million. It's all the same to me. But 50 million people across the globe were interested in what it means to be mentally strong. And I'm so excited that the conversation has continued. It's been years since that article came out, but that people are still talking about it, I think, really shows that we're interested in it. We just don't know what to do or how to do it.
Anita in Whitefish Bay has something for us. Hi, Anita. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think this is such a critical conversation to be having. And as a parent, I have 4 kids, and I used to be a teacher. So I've experienced being on both sides of the helicopter parent discussion. But what you were just talking about, giving kids the ability to manage their emotions and not to have the idea that any emotion is bad, but all emotions are part of what make us fully human. And it's figuring out how to work with those emotions and deal with them effectively. I know when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to be sad. You know, my parents would say, what are you crying for? I'll give you something to cry about. And it was always with a threat that there was going to be some physical harm. So I think parents today may be conflicted in not wanting their kids to be upset, but then they shortchange them in the long run.
Yeah. Anita, thank you so much. Amy, I'm sure you have comments.
I do. I think that is one of the biggest things that we're seeing right now, is that it's uncomfortable as parents to see your child upset. So for a lot of parents, if their child's sad, they think, I better cheer them up. Or if their child is bored, they say, I'll entertain them. Or if their child's scared about something and the parent doesn't really get why it's scary, they just say, calm down, or it's not a big deal. And we do send the message sometimes that emotions are bad. Or right now as a society, everybody's talking about happiness. And it's great to be happy, but you can't be happy all the time. You also have to take the good with the bad. Instead of proactively teach kids, what can you do when you're sad? And it's okay to feel sad, but you don't want to get stuck there. So that if you are in a bad mood when you wake up in the morning, you don't have to stay in a bad mood all day. You can take some control over your feelings. Or when you're angry, how do you calm yourself down? I see so many parents who calm their kids down whenever their kids are upset, but they don't ever take the time to teach their child, how do you calm yourself down? And no matter how many skills your child has at school, he could be the best math student in the world or the best tennis player on the team, but if he can't calm himself down or he can't control his temper, he'll never be successful. So I think it's really about teaching kids to have those emotional skills so they can do it for themselves when you're not right there to do it for them.
Yeah. Anita, thank you again. I really appreciate your call. I want to give Alinda in Hartford a chance to join us. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just tuned in just shortly ago, but you know, this is a real hot topic in my house right now. I have two kids, 16 and 14, and I mean, I guess I brought them up right, I would hope to say, that I've always told them, you know, make the impossible possible. It's your life. You got to, you know, whatever you want, strive to get. But a lot of my daughter, which is the youngest one, many of her friends are either already on Prozac, and two of them have been in Rogers this past, like, summer. And I don't know how to go to their parents. Some of them I know, some of them I don't, you know, to help them, because I'm sure they're terrified of what their child is going through. And, one of her friends ran away, and my daughter calls me and says, can you go pick up so-and-so? I just want to help their parents to help the kids. I'm not sure how to go about that.
Thanks for calling, Linda. Amy, any comments or suggestions?
Yeah, that's a tough one because certainly you don't want to meddle in other people's lives, but how do you support other parents? And I think what we're seeing these days is things like social media, rather than bringing parents together to talk about problems, it's often creating this parenting competition and all these other scenarios that aren't helpful. And to be clear, too, it sounds like she's talking about some kids that more than likely have mental health problems. And there's a difference between mental strength and mental health, that you can still build mental strength. So even if a child has depression, but mental strength can also help ward off mental health problems. And I say if we were to talk about it like a physical health issue, maybe you have diabetes, but you could still become physically strong. You could go to the gym, complicating factor, but you could still do it. So just to be clear on that, but I think sometimes just to reach out to other parents and say, hey, is there anything I can do, to help you? Or just be there to listen. Because I think it's so isolating sometimes for parents who are raising a kid who has issues, or it can be embarrassing, or parents feel a lot of shame. So sometimes just a kind, supportive ear can go a long way toward helping them talk it over, or say, gosh, you know, what should I do? Or do you have any suggestions on a support group? Or should I talk to the doctor? Or so I think just showing some kindness and compassion rather than making them feel blamed or feel guilty can definitely go a long way. So it sounds like maybe a phone call or a kind gesture, if you do see them, could be just what they need to be able to start to open up to somebody.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Mary in Minocqua, Wisconsin, next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. It's just good to be with you. And the discussion prompted me thoughts of when my husband died a few years ago, that I made a conscious decision to be positive and remember all the good stuff that we had together and not remember the bad stuff. Because when you have six kids and you married over 40 years, there's a mix of good and bad, and the good always outweighs the bad. And it's helped me, and I've told that to other people, and I hope it helped them.
Thank you very much, Mary. Amy, a comment?
Yeah, I like that a lot. There's an exercise in the book about going after the good. If you have a child that hates school, for example, then your child may be tempted to come home and tell you all the bad things that happened. So sometimes as a parent, you have to go after the good and proactively say, what was the best part about your day today? What was the best thing that happened to you? And to point out to kids, yep, there's good and bad in almost everything that we do, but to be able to look at both of those angles, you don't just want to focus on the bad stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a quote from someone, and I can't remember who now, unfortunately, but the quote was, it's not about what it could have been, it's about what it was. Celebrate what it was.
I like that. I think that a lot of our energy goes into sometimes thinking that shouldn't be the case or I shouldn't have had to go through that, rather than just accepting it happened. And accepting it doesn't mean you have to like it, but just acknowledging it was what it was.
Well, you talk about so many things in the book. Well, you've got 13 mentally things strong parents don't do. And I'm just thinking about one of the chapters where you talk about don't let your child avoid responsibility. And you had, I think the story in that chapter was about a son, getting a son to move out of the house and so forth.
Yeah, I think it's so easy these days to say, well, you know, I don't want my child to have to grow up too fast, or I don't want to give my kids extra chores to do or extra jobs. I just want my kid to be a kid. But we're finding that chores are actually wonderful for kids, and giving kids chores when they're 3 and 4 years old can actually be a huge predictor of their success as an adult. When you ask your kid to fold the clothes or put their laundry in the drawers, you're not punishing them. It's not doing them any damage. In fact, you're going to be teaching them how to become responsible people and to follow through with that. So by the time you have a teenager, your teenager should be doing lots of chores around the house, should be able to be responsible with homework and be able to manage some money and all of these things. But I think as parents, it's so easy sometimes to just want to protect our kids and treat them like they're a lot younger than they are, or that they're not as capable as they probably could be. And then they turn 18 and we think, oh no, now they're supposed to be on their own. And we're seeing that adolescence is lasting longer and longer. When kids are 22 years old, parents are still often taking on a lot of the responsibility for the child, even though they're now an adult. And it's not good for kids. They can be out there doing so much in the world, even when they are teenagers, if we just teach them how to be responsible.
You know, just along with that, Naomi on Facebook says she once heard that the best way to make things hard for your children is to make things easy for them. Parents need to allow children from an early age to make mistakes and learn from them, offer guidance, show them that you trust them to make decisions. This is what builds confidence.
She's absolutely right that we need to make sure that kids know that you believe in them. I see a lot of parents that will protect their kids or they won't let them make a mistake. And kids grow up thinking, I'm too fragile. If my mom and dad didn't trust that I could handle hardships in life, then it must be because I can't. So then when they're 22, 25 years old, they're still calling mom or dad because they can't deal with something that happened at work, or they're still struggling with something and they don't know what to do with it. We need to give them practice making mistakes and then showing them it's okay. How do you bounce back when you fail? And then kids say, okay, just like any other skill, they need to be able to practice it hands-on. Your child didn't learn how to play the violin by reading a book or by watching you do it. They had to do it themselves. So same thing when it comes to building mental muscle. Your child needs practice and exercise doing it every single day.
And, you know, I think it's 43% of children now live in single-parent homes or from divorced families. And I think that's another important chapter in your book when you write about that mentally strong parents don't shield their child from pain. And that's an important chapter any divorced parent should understand and know and read.
Yeah, it's our, you know, again, we just want to protect kids. Nobody wants to see them suffer or get hurt. But on the same level, life is painful. When you give them opportunities to experience a little bit of pain head on, it builds their confidence to know, okay, I can do this. I've got this, when they go through hardships later on.
And in the example you used, you had a family that it was divorced, but in some ways trying to remain together. And it, as you say, it sort of delayed the kind of grief that maybe children should have gone through with a divorce.
Yeah, and the example, the mom and dad really wanted to continue to have contact and sort of pretend like they were divorced, even though they were. They still had family meals and celebrated holidays together to try to spare the kids from pain. But what they didn't realize was, I mean, at some point, these kids had to realize that their parents were divorced and they were going to have to go through the grief process. So they were just delaying it. They weren't doing them any real favors. The sooner that they could go through it, then the sooner the kids could start to heal from it. And grief is the process by which we heal. just to let kids go through grief, which is hard to do.
Yeah, it's very hard to do. Well, I assume your book is being well received.
It is. I'm very grateful that so far the feedback I've gotten from readers has been wonderful.
I'm really glad that we had this chance to talk. One final word of wisdom in the last 30 seconds for parents?
You know, I think just for parents to know that as parents you're going to make mistakes and you can keep trying, and every day is an opportunity to role model to your kids how do you be mentally strong and how do you incorporate self-improvement and mental strength into your own life.
It's been a pleasure, Amy, and I really enjoyed your book, and I meant it when I said it would be a great book for any parent to take a look at. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Amy Morin, the author of 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do. It's really worth a look for parents and for grandparents as well. I can tell you that for sure. Well, just taking a look ahead to tomorrow, a whole different set of things to deal with tomorrow, because we're going to talk about insects. Phil Pelletieri will be back to talk and answer all of your insect questions. That's tomorrow at 11. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.